Hi, I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Artie Shaw Redux, the life and music of bandleader and clarinetist Artie Shaw. Welcome to Jazz Rhythm, a weekly exploration of the culture, lore, and personalities of early jazz. In this hour, we'll learn of Artie Shaw's development as an exceptional musician, leading one of the finest swing ensembles of the 1930s and 40s. Before his huge success of the late 30s, Artie Shaw was just another hardworking, though very talented, musician. Music was actually his second career choice. He entered music only to make enough money to follow his real aspiration, which was to become a writer. But on his way to simply earning a living, deeper involvement in music seized Artie Shaw's fertile mind and willing heart. The words of Artie Shaw as read by Peter Coyote.
I heard Bix and Trumbauer, and I said, those are the guys. Being a white guy, I was subjected to white music, and I heard Bix and Trumbauer, and they were the exemplars. The first Louis Armstrong record I stumbled on was Savoy Blues. I can sing it for you right now. I can write out his whole solo. And something about that, I realized I was no longer playing music. I was playing an art form, something bigger than music. And I had to learn what that was all about. It had its own inner structure. I couldn't have used words like that, but I knew there was something going on there that I had to figure out. All of this was inarticulate, very chaotic in my mind. I went to see Louis Armstrong in Chicago. I made a pilgrimage and drove up from Cleveland. And I sat on a rug-covered bandstand and just waited. And he came on. And the first thing he played was West End Blues. And I heard this cascade of notes coming out of a trumpet. No one had ever done that before. And so I was obsessed with the idea that this was what you had to do. Something that was your own. That had nothing to do with anybody else. I was influenced by him, not in terms of notes, but in terms of the idea of doing what you are, who you are.
At Sundown, a live broadcast from 1939, one of the many Artie Shaw rarities issued on a 5-CD set selected by Shaw for a lasting self-portrait on BMG's Bluebird label. More from that ahead, along with vocalists Helen Forrest, Lena Horne, and Tony Pastor, jazz trumpeters Orrin Hotlips Page, Billy Butterfield, and Roy Eldridge on this jazz rhythm portrait of Artie Shaw. Throughout this hour-long program, we're going to hear from Shaw's own recollections and reflections on music, both as read by Peter Coyote and from Shaw himself, as heard in a film documentary from the 80s called Time is All You've Got. Buster Harding was one of the arranger-composers who wrote for Artie Shaw's many bands. Here's his jumping, The Hornet from 1945.
I decided I would write a piece for a string quartet and jazz clarinet and add a small rhythm section for when the jazz stuff started, just as a kick. And I called it Interlude in B-flat for the simple reason that it was in B-flat and it was to fill an interlude. So there it was. We played the piece. It was a three-minute piece. That was what they needed, 3 minutes. So I wrote a piece that lasted roughly 3 minutes and a few seconds, give or take. Well, to my astonishment and everybody else on the program, the thing absolutely broke up the show. People whistled and cheered and clapped and yelled. And so I stood there and said, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what to do. I mean, I wrote this one piece, and that's all we have. I haven't got anything else. So somebody yelled long before Casablanca, play it again. So we called out the cello player and the viola player and the two string fiddlers and the group, and we played it again. And this time they were deadly quiet, and that was it. So as a result of that, shortly afterwards, I started getting calls from agents. So I put together my first band, which was a string quartet and a small jazz band with a small rhythm section. The string section, well tuned, is a beautiful instrument. And yes, I liked it. It gave me much more range musically for doing some of the things I want to do. The string men were sort of the legitimate section, and the jazz guys were the usual jazz guys. Matter of fact, they had almost a rigid separation in lifestyles. We traveled in two different buses at times. And even in one bus, the strings were always in one part of the bus and the jazz band in another. Now and then there would be crossovers. It was like two enemy camps, two alien camps.
I have a letter from a violinist who worked in my first band, string quartet-based jazz band. And he wrote me a letter saying that he had gone through all the conservatories he could think of, and he thought he knew something about music by the time he joined my band. He said he learned more in the first rehearsal than in all the years he'd been playing violin, because I was talking about music, not about notes, not about how you play them, but where they fit in with the rest of the band. You're playing with other people.
What set Artie Shaw apart from other swing clarinetists was that he had a terrific clarinet tone, technique, and style. Not as jazzy or as hot as Goodman, but Shaw had great musical balance and a rich, fully developed tone. The difference between Goodman and Shaw, as Artie Shaw perceived it, was that Goodman primarily played clarinet, while Shaw was focused on playing music. Reflecting on it, he said,
"Benny Goodman and I worked together quite a while in radio. He was a weird guy. I talked to his brother, Freddie, who ran my band one time, and I said, 'What was Benny like growing up?' He said, 'Stupid.' I said, 'Oh, come on, he couldn't have been totally stupid. Look what he did with a horn.' Because he was a superb technician." And Fred said, "That's what he did. He did nothing else. It's like he's not exactly an idiot savant, but something like that. It's what he knew. There was nothing else." Benny Goodman once said to me, "This thing will never let you down," which was a strange thing to say about a piece of wood with some keys on it. I didn't think of it as holding you up, but that's what he saw in the clarinet. And I think it was his life. He focused on that, and he did it extremely well. But his problem was he had a limited vocabulary in music. Altered chords were something beyond his perception. If you listen to his playing, it's superb, but it's limited.
Other factors setting Artie Shaw's orchestra apart from other large swing bands were a lively swing in spirit. Listen especially to how the sax section has a distinctive fullness and coherence. Contrast that bit of Goodman's Moonglow with Artie Shaw's version. His commitment to broadening the range of big band orchestration through superb writing and arranging expanded its palette. He added a symphonic dimension, but without losing a sense of swing. He refused to recognize any distinction between jazz and concert music, saying, quote, "Music is music after all. Think of jazz as a tributary to the main river that we call music." I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Jazz Rhythm, Jumping Swing, Classic Blues, and Hot Jazz, Old and New. Thanks so much for being with me for Artie Shaw Redux, exploring and reassessing the life and music of a remarkable musician, an icon of the swing era, and a rather thoughtful observer of American culture. Shaw was able to successfully explore third-stream music, that is, the fusion of jazz and symphonic instrumentation, by adding French horn, oboe, violins, and cello, successfully drawing them together in an organic whole.
The band was made up of men who had worked together and who'd worked under my leadership for almost 3 years. They were practically able to breathe together. I don't think there ever was a better ensemble band. I mean, in terms of just playing together, thinking together, breathing together, executing together, I don't think you could get a better sound.
Artie Shaw swings the cats out of the wigwams with an original tune, Serenade to a Savage.
Thank you.
Artie Shaw's technical achievements as a clarinet player drew both from his background as an alto saxophonist and a kind of a certain Jewish flavor, ranging from a cantorial grandeur to the lightness and whimsy of Jewish klezmer music. Shaw also trained himself to keep his tone full, right up into the highest register of the clarinet, where some other players' clarinet tones could become thinned out or screechy. Serenade to a Savage, and a quick sample contrasting Shaw and Goodman's renditions of Moonglow, April in Paris was a typically skillful mixing of strings and jazz horns in Artie Shaw's best orchestras. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for being with me for the award-winning Jazz Rhythm and a focus on the life and music of Artie Shaw. Here's Go Fly a Kite with a very good vocal by lead saxophonist Tony Pastor. And by the way, I'd never noticed before how much his singing sounds like Louis Prima. Then a 1941 disc featuring singer Lena Horne, backed by a Shaw orchestra that included Benny Carter on alto sax, trumpeter Henry Red Allen, trombonist J.C. Higginbotham, a harp, and 12 strings.
Troubles to the tail, they'll be blown away by a merry gale. Go fly a kite and toss your worries to the wind, and they won't come back, they'll be too chagrined. Go on, make friends with the sky, have a talk with the sun. It's the bright way to live, if you pardon the pun. Go fly a kite and you'll imagine you're a king, 'cause you've got your world on a piece of string.
Lena Horne with a great Artie Shaw band in 1941, and Tony Pastor, who was vocalist and featured tenor sax soloist with the orchestra from 1936 to 1940. Still ahead, more of Shaw's reflections on music, another live rarity from the 5-CD box set of Shaw recordings called Self-Portrait, plus we'll hear jazz trumpeter Orrin Hot Lips Page, his magnificent recording with Shaw's band of St. James Infirmary. I hope this trip through the life and music of Artie Shaw is as interesting and stimulating to you as it was for me to assemble. This is, of course, Jazz Rhythm, a weekly celebration and exploration of jumping swing, classic blues, and hot jazz, old and new. I'm Dave Radlauer.